We are looking at the very rapid deterioration now of the relationship between the Jewish people and the Roman people, particularly in the Middle East, that will eventually blow up into the prophetic destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem and of the Jewish people as a state, as a governmental entity. We've come to the point that the book of Acts has a lot to say about, which is the Apostle Paul's trial or hearing before Festus, the new prefect or procurator of the Jewish territories in the Middle East, and King Agrippa II and Queen Bernice. This all happens at Caesarea on the coast. In the early fall of 60. And you remember that Procurator Festus has a problem. Paul has appealed to have his case heard by Nero at Rome, even though every indication in the documents related to his original charges seem to indicate he should be released. But that's not an option for Festus anymore, because the words came out of a Roman citizen's mouth, "I appeal to Caesar." So he is asking Agrippa, who knows Judaism very well, and Bernice, who also knows Judaism very well, if they would listen to Paul's remarks at the palace there by the seaside and give him some advice. So they do, and it's all there in Acts chapter 26. But when Paul is done, Festus is like, "Paul, your much learning has driven you crazy," because he's talking about supernatural things that Festus doesn't seem to have a heart for. But Paul says, "No, great Festus, I am not insane. King Agrippa knows very well all these things that I'm talking about, because they didn't happen in a corner." And then he turns to King Agrippa and says, "King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know you do." And you know what he's doing. He is appealing to King Agrippa to believe the gospel, that Jesus is the Christ, the prophesied Messiah, who died for his sins and rose again for his justification. So King Agrippa knows that's where Paul is going with this, and so King Agrippa says back to him, "Paul, do you think that just in a short time you can convince me to become a Christian?" And Paul's response back is, "King Agrippa, whether short time or long, I wish that you and all those that are listening here to me today could become just like me, except, of course, for these chains." Now, that last was a laugh line, and it's a bigger laugh line than you realize, because remember who he's talking to: King Agrippa II. His father, King Agrippa I, spent 6 months wearing iron chains, just like Paul spent the last 2 years doing, because King Agrippa I was a wastrel, and he'd also suggested that maybe it would be good for the world if Tiberius would die and let Caligula become the new emperor, and that got him arrested, and his case just kept getting postponed. So he just had to go around in chains. But after Tiberius died and Caligula became the new emperor, Caligula had Herod Agrippa I's iron chains taken off, and he gave him gold chains of the same weight as a reminder of his change of fortune. And so this son, King Agrippa II, knows that story well. He's probably seen both the iron chains and the golden chains many, many, many days of his life. And so here's Paul saying, I'd love for you all to be just like me, except for these chains. I want you to be Christians. When Paul's testimony was finished, you know that Agrippa and Bernice and Festus went into another room, had a chat about it, and Agrippa's response was, if this man hadn't appealed to Caesar, he should be set free. There's no charges here. And so that's how Paul ends up being put on a ship off to Rome in that late part of 60. And you know the rest of his story. But let's talk about the rest of what happened with the Roman-Jewish relationship. In 61 and 62, during Festus's very brief tenure, he carried out major operations against certain Sicarii and Messianic cults that were out there burning and plundering villages all over Judea. So like we've already talked about, civil order is breaking down in the lower Middle East. Eventually, the leader of this one particular Sicarii Messianic cult was captured and killed, and many of his followers also killed by Festus's forces. In the winter of 62, or 61 going into 62, or maybe the very early spring of 62, Herod Agrippa decided that he would build a brand new dining patio on an eastern tower of his Hasmonean palace that was overlooking the Temple Mount. It already had a nice view of the Temple Mount generally, but he was high enough that he could actually see into the court of the priests. He could see them, although it's at a distance, it's about half a mile, he could actually see them throwing the sacrifices up on the altar of burnt offering. And so he had a dining patio built up on the top of this tower so he could lay there and watch everything happening in the temple court of the worship of the priests while he was eating. When the priests found out that he was doing that, they had a fit that anyone other than priests could see what they were doing. So they had a screening wall built along the western perimeter of the inner court to block his view. Now, you know that didn't make him happy. But it also did not make the Roman soldiers happy because they are walking on patrol along the top of the porticos around the perimeter of the Temple Mount, and they want to be able to see all the way across from wherever they're at with the least amount of objects in their way. And so everybody gets together, Agrippa and Festus, as the Jewish and Roman leadership in control of what goes on the Temple Mount. And they ordered these priests to tear that new wall down. But the priests argued this: it is now part of a sacred site. It cannot be torn down unless it's ordered by the emperor, because that's the way the Roman law works. And so with Festus's agreement, the high priest, Ishmael, and a delegation of Jews that apparently were involved in the building of the wall, who'd been chained up, they departed for Rome to appeal their case to Caesar. Now, these guys are probably all Roman citizens. Many of the high priestly families were Roman citizens. And so they've appealed their case to Caesar, and so that's where they're going. In the spring or summer of that same year that we're talking about, 62, Josephus, who is writing the histories that I'm depending on right now, he followed that Jewish delegation off to Rome on a different ship because he felt very strongly that those Jews who had done these things did it out of their own very personally held religious beliefs. And he wanted to go and help them out. Now, a little bit about Josephus. He's 26 at the time that this is happening, but he has been very religious, very studious, and very influential for already a good 10 years. So he's one of those hot burners. He's like the Apostle Paul. He was ahead of all of his peers of the same age. So he makes his way by ship toward Italy. And wouldn't you know it, something happens to him that had happened a couple of years earlier to the Apostle Paul. His ship goes down. And he tells a little story about it that includes how there were 600 passengers on this ship. So it tells you how big the ship was and that he was among the first to be rescued. Once they were rescued, they made their way to Puteoli, the same place where Paul lands in order to go up to Rome. But at Puteoli, he ends up meeting a Jewish actor who was loved by the Emperor Nero. Now, that's pretty much the same thing as meeting a movie star or a television star that would be loved by the head of the country or the head of an empire in this case. And so through that new connection, Josephus became acquainted with the wife of the emperor. This is his new wife. Her name is Pompeia. She was pregnant. She was a mistress, becoming a new wife at this time. And Josephus immediately takes advantage of that new connection and says, could you please appeal to Nero on our behalf to help these Jewish people out that are here brought up on charges of wanting to keep a building wall in place. So Pompeia convinces her husband Nero to rule in favor of the priests, which he does. And so the wall will stay, and Agrippa II won't be able to watch things from his dining room on the top of his tower. Now, Pompeia decides that she's going to keep the high priest Ishmael that she's become acquainted with here in Rome with her. So Agrippa sends back a new high priest. Now, while all this is happening, something has happened in Judea. Festus dies suddenly. And Nero, once he's apprised of that reality, he orders a man by the name of Albinus to assume the office of procurator, which he does. We end up with there being, let's see here, let me get to my notes better here. We have Agrippa around this time deciding that he wants to give the high priesthood to a new priest by the name of Ananus, the son of Ananus. Now, the Ananus that was the dad in that name was the guy involved in the Jesus story, the condemnation of Jesus. He was kind of the head of the priestly family in the gospel stories. So this is his son, the brother-in-law of Joseph Caiaphas, that was in the gospel story. He becomes the new powerful high priest in Jerusalem. Toward the end of his three-month high priesthood, and we'll find out why it was only 3 months long, Albinus had not yet arrived in Judea. He was on his way from Alexandria, Egypt. Ananus decides it is time to strike against the Nazarene sect again. And so he convenes the Sanhedrin, and they arrest James, the half-brother of Jesus, who has been the leader of the Jerusalem church ever since 33. So this is 62 we're talking about. So it's a good 30 years since Jesus appointed his half-brother to this position. And so they arrest James and other Christian Jewish leaders of the church, and they put them through a real quick trial, and then they summarily stone them in direct violation of Roman law, because they should have been, their stoning or their execution should have been approved by the prefect, or the procurator of the Jewish, of the Roman people here. Certain Jews at Jerusalem were so upset about this breach of protocol that they sent delegations to Agrippa, King Agrippa, because remember, King Agrippa doesn't live in Jerusalem. He comes there three times a year for the Jewish festivals, but most of the time he's living up north of the Sea of Galilee, or he's over in Rome. So these guys are so upset about the killing of these Jewish Christians without Roman protocol that they complain to King Agrippa as the custodian of the Temple Mount, and they also send a delegation down toward Egypt to let Albinus know that he has been he's been left out of the loop, so to speak. Albinus immediately wrote a letter threatening Annas with action once he arrived. And Agrippa turns around and sends a letter back that deprived Annas of his high priesthood after only 3 months, and he replaces him with someone else. When Albinus came to the lower Middle East, came to Jerusalem, came to Caesarea, he saw that it was necessary for him to carry out a whole bunch of operations against these Sicarii, these curved knife assassins that are basically killing off high-profile Jewish people that are perfectly fine with the status quo of having a relationship with the Jews and the Romans. High Priest Ananus, the guy that just lost his job, during the next couple of years, he uses his wealth to start bribing people to do what he wants. So he bribes Albinus, he bribes the new high priest, and he basically wants them to overlook all of his questionable activities, which includes something we already talked about once. And that is because he considers himself kind of like the head of the of a Jewish high priestly family, they go out and confiscate tithing supplies without them just simply being turned in. They specifically want certain things to be given to them, so they're out confiscating them. And so he's bribing people to leave him alone as he does that. Ananus' son is a man by the name of Eleazar, and he ends up becoming the head of Temple Mount Security. That is really important to understand. He is a key player in what happens next. The Sicarii kidnapped Eleazar's scribe and then ransomed him back when Ananus convinced Albinus to release 10 captured Sicarii. So you can already see this is going to be a problem, right? The Sicarii realize if we kidnap certain key people, we can get 10 of our people released. This further contributes to the breakdown of civil society amongst the Jewish people. In 63, going into 64, Agrippa keep swapping out the high priest position. And I think it's because he's hoping to keep the peace between the different high priestly families. All of them want to have a bite at the pie, if you will, or a bite at the apple. They're all vying with each other. They're fighting amongst themselves on a regular basis now. And we're not just talking about verbal fights. We're talking about in the street throwing rocks. That's how bad it is. And Albinus, well, as the procurator, he's come up with a new way of doing business for himself. And that is, you know what? I will accept bribes to release people from custody. There's a price for everyone to be freed. And so he does that on a under-the-table basis. He does it for individuals. Eventually, though, he gets replaced. In 64, a man named Florus, whose wife is a very close personal friend of Pompeia, the wife of the Emperor Nero, manages to get himself appointed as the next procurator of Judea. Now, he seems to be going there for his own personal purposes, mainly to line his pocket. Remember, the area of Judea and Samaria, Idumea, Galilee, this whole Jewish homeland area was a very prominent part of the Roman Empire. It was very wealthy. It was well-to-do. And so there's a lot of money to be made there. And now he seems to be thinking it's like a gold rush for him. So he goes there in order to make the most of it. Now, when Albinus, you know, the guy that's getting ready to be replaced, found out that his replacement was on the way, he decided to execute anybody that was violent, that he had in custody. But as for everybody else, he did what he's already been doing. He just did it on a mass scale. He said, everybody can be sold into their freedom. Come, pay me, and I will let them go. It was like a fire sale of prisoners. And this is how, this is Josephus's comment, this is how the entire Jewish countryside was filled with gang members at the tail end of the procuratorship of Albinus and the beginning of Florus's procuratorship. And that is in 64, the very beginning of 64. Now, you should remember what happened in the summer of 64. In August, Rome burned. And you know that it's not too long after that that they start blaming Christians for being arsonists, and they start executing them and confiscating their goods and things like that. Well, in the Middle East, in the lower Middle East, it was right around that time that all the planned upgrades for the Temple Mount were finished, things that Agrippa had already approved. 18,000 Jewish construction workers were facing unemployment in the summer of 64. And so they requested that King Agrippa would approve an extensive renovation of what's called the Solomon Portico. Now, this is where the church was birthed. This was where Jesus had met with his apostles on a regular basis and taught, but also where the apostles taught, and the church kind of had it as their adopted corner or front of the Temple Mount. It's on the east side of the Temple Mount, and it's an extensive portico that originally had been built by Solomon and then rebuilt by Zerubbabel. And then when Herod the Great expanded the Temple Mount massively, he left Zerubbabel's grand Solomon portico in place and then just added to it to make the perimeter of the Temple Mount. So these folks are saying, you know what? That could be better. Let's improve it. Herod Agrippa said no. The logistics of tearing that down and rebuilding it in such a grand fashion, plus the cost that would be involved in it, is just way too high. But he did understand the difficulty of having suddenly a lot of unemployed construction workers. So he approved a repaving project all over Jerusalem so that all the stones of all the roads, all the pathways would be replaced with white stone. So just making Jerusalem even more beautiful. In 64, we also know that the last switch to a high priest before the rebellion actually blew up took place. And that's recorded by Josephus, that a man by the name of Matthias, the son of Theophilus, became the new high priest. Well, that brings us then to the very key year of 66, which is where we will start next time. And in just the few seconds that I have left today, I want to remind you that all the things that I've been talking about can be found in the first and second book of the Maccabees, in the earliest part of the history, and thereafter in the Antiquities of the Jews and of the Wars of the Jews, written by Josephus. Go out, find yourself a copy.